Welcome to episode 6 of Coffin Cast. My name is Kristen. I'll say what I say at the first of every episode, at the beginning of every episode. If this is not your first episode, thank you so much for listening. If it is your first episode, please start at the beginning so you know what you're getting into and make sure that it's right for you. It's a dark subject matter. It's not happy stuff. Also, I'm not a professional. Not great at this. I feel like I'm getting better with practice, but, you know, I'm a little partial to myself, so I could be wrong. Anyway, welcome, guys. We're at the 6th episode. I'm almost at 100 listens. I am so close. I know what's going to happen this weekend. Please listen. Please share. Do whatever. Share with your friends. And as I say, share with your friends. Share with your enemies. Do that. Because I want to break 100. It would make me feel so happy. And I want to be happy. Don't you want me to be happy? I mean, what's wrong with you? God. Anyway, enough about that. So, also, on Twitter, I've been getting a lot more followers. I have 16 followers now, which is a pretty big deal for me because I was feeling kind of sad that I didn't have any. I'm up to 16 now. Most of them are fellow podcasters, so I appreciate you guys. I'm trying to listen to all your podcasts so that way I can give you shout-outs. I have listened to one because the premise is just amazing. I have shown this to people I know. They all think it's amazing. Florida Men on Florida Man. That sounds weird. I'll repeat it again. Florida Men on Florida Man. Holy cow, it's the funniest podcast I've heard in a long time. It's basically four friends from Florida talk about whatever Florida Man headline there were that week. I think they share a couple each or one each. I don't remember. I'm still listening to it. But it's so funny, and the guys get along so well, and they have such a great chemistry together. Definitely recommend it. Again, that's Florida Man on Florida Men on Florida Man. So check that out. Listen to them. They're great. They've made me want to co-host. So, hey, if you're interested in maybe co-hosting with me, send me a voice message, and if you're enough like me and you're into these things enough, do like a short story, a short little research thing, and then we'll go from there. You can leave voice messages on anchor.fm through my Anchor page. I'll put that in the Twitter account, and maybe we'll do a co-hosting gig together. Maybe we'll make this less a one-woman show and more of a duo thing. I would like that. Or even more. You know, I might rotate. I don't know. I feel like I'm talking to myself, and I don't enjoy talking to myself because I can't have a conversation with myself and not be crazy. Also, I run out of steam as I'm doing these because it's just me talking for a half hour. I mean, I take breaks in between and do it in segments so it's not so crazy. But I would love to have somebody to have kind of a back and forth with on these stories. It would make my life, my podcasting life, so much better. Anyway, so today's episode, we're going to talk about another case that I came across through my 911 call obsession on YouTube, because I'm a sick individual, we've established that. This was the case that I was going to be doing last week, but then I decided on Harvey Milk, because for some reason I had to do Harvey Milk. I just felt like I had to. So this one's probably not as well known, but it's such a weird story to me. Like, I'm not even sure after the 2 weeks of research I did on this case that I even get it. I don't know. I mean, I know the motive behind what happened. I don't know that I fully understand everything about it, though. And I think you'll get that more as I go into this, but let's go ahead and just jump right in. Let's go ahead and meet Melinda Plesovic. So as I always do in my episodes, I like to talk about the victim and who they were before what happened to them. If that, I didn't say that right. See, this is why I'm not a professional, guys. I say stupid crap like that. I'd like to get to who they were aside from the incident that happened to them before they were considered victims. So I'm going to read directly from the obituary of Melinda Plesovic. So it says, Plesovic Melinda J., née Showman, age 49, beloved wife of 25 years to Bruce, loving mother of Megan, Anna, in parentheses, Jeffrey Scullin, fiancé, and Kyle, cherished grandmother of Aurora, dearest daughter of the late George Michael Lloyd and Opal, née Brundage Showman. Dear sister of Juanita Lease, Ed Wise, Jim Wise, and the late Betty Gardner. Also survived by aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews, and many dear friends, and her adopted family of Bill, Nancy, Scott, Lynn, and Melanie Goete. It's spelled G-O-E-T-T-E. I'm going to say Goete, because that's what I do. Anyway, Melinda was a teacher in the Strongville school system for 27 years, and in various news outlets, it was actually reported that she had a strong love of soccer, played, as a 49-year-old woman, she played soccer with people, and coached girls' soccer for years. She was a beloved member of the Strongsville community, and most people knew her not for what happened to her, but just because she was a beloved member of the community, a teacher, somebody who people looked to for advice, people could always count on her when they needed her. And that's kind of why this whole story is just, it's ridiculous and it's sad, but before we get into it, gonna take a quick break and then we will dive right in head first to this really weird and confusing story. So we're at October 23rd, 2017. The Plesovic family was supposed to be meeting at a local Applebee's to discuss the upcoming nuptials of Anna and Jeffrey Scullin. He had moved in with their family about a year prior when Anna gave birth to their daughter Aurora. They both were pretty young. I believe they were 20, 21 at the time of this all transpiring. And they were about 5 days away from their wedding when they were going to be meeting up. So it was last minute, you know, loose ends to tie and things like that. The family waited for Melinda to show up. She was supposed to be there and she didn't come. So they ate dinner and then they ended up going home. Nothing could prepare them for what they saw when they got there. Melinda had been stabbed 36 to 37 times and was lying dead on the kitchen floor. Her son Kyle, who was nonverbal and had Down syndrome, was the only one home during the attack. Jeffrey got his daughter and also Kyle, Melinda's young son, outside before he called 911. Bruce, who was on the inside of the home, called 911 at the same time. Now, there's going to be basically, as I'm talking about this, there's going to be dueling 911 calls, so bear with me. It's going to get confusing, but I'm going to do my best to explain it. So Jeffrey calls 911 once he gets his daughter and Kyle outside. He says, somebody's been attacked in my home. He said, somebody's been attacked in my home. The 911 operator asks, like, who, you know, the usual stuff, the address. And then he repeats himself and she said, her husband attacked her? He said, no. He was adamant that it wasn't him. But somebody had, and she'd been stabbed a lot, and there was blood all around her, and that's all he could really tell. The 911 operator asked if anybody wanted to hurt her or had been harassing her. He said no. They asked, and this is weird, they asked if he had a black lab, and the family did have a black lab. A black lab had been spotted running around, and somehow they got a 911 call about it. So the dog got out during the attack. One other thing, they asked if there was any sign of breaking in or anything, and Jeffrey said no, both the doors were locked. So that's kind of fishy. He was also talking to Bruce a little bit. he kept trailing off and talking to Bruce while he was on the call with 911. And Bruce said that he saw a lot of stab marks and things like that. So Jeffrey was extremely calm during the call. You could hear a little bit of tension in his voice, but it wasn't like overly emotional. He's very matter of fact. And in fact, the 911 operator at the end of the call said Jeffrey did good and that she apologized for the circumstances that he was in. So that was Jeffrey's call. Bruce's call, on the other hand, he was livid. You could hear it in his voice. He was sad, of course. He was devastated, but he was pissed at what happened. He said, "We've had people breaking into our house, and we've called you guys on this, and now somebody's killed her." And he was swearing, dropping F-bombs. He was mad that somebody had broken into his house, and they called so many times, and they'd never been able to catch the person, and now she was dead. So, let's go back a bit and talk about those break-ins. Melinda had been posting on Facebook that somebody had been breaking into her home and other kind of eerie incidents. There were nails in car tires, stealing car keys, and setting off car alarms. She posted, "Whoever has stolen my car keys was playing with the remote at 4:30 a.m. and kept starting the van at 7. Also, she posted, "Set off car alarm again with stolen remote and found a nail in Bruce's tire." In June of the previous year, her daughter, Anna, had called police because there were people peeking in the windows and knocking on the back door. Money had also been disappearing from the home, like cash and things like that. Once Jeffrey even had thwarted a burglar who was trying to break in when he was home alone, and he called police. So back to Melinda. Police showed up and knew that whoever had killed her had to have known her. Not only was she stabbed 36 times, but this is what the two men didn't see. She was shot in the head. She was shot and stabbed. So whoever did this to her was super angry with her for some reason. Also, the house was locked, as Jeffrey said. Whoever did this wanted to make sure that she was going to be dead. The neighbor's house had a security camera that pointed at their back door, and no one entered or left the home that day through the back door. Naturally, the first suspect would be who has ever been doing the break-ins that they were talking about. Second would probably be her husband. Third would be anybody that was at home at that time, so meaning her son. On the Thursday prior to Melinda's death, someone attempted to break in again, but the family dog had chased them off. So that's the lab that went missing, I believe. When news first broke, there was kind of a panic in Strongsville because people believed that there was a possible serial killer on the loose. Also, the fact that this was just about a week before Halloween kind of didn't do much to quell those fears. You know, they thought something creepy was going on. So police requested that Bruce and Jeffrey, the two men that found her, allow them to search their vehicles and home. Both men gave permission, and there was nothing found in Bruce's car and just a tactical knife in Jeffrey's that they confiscated to run tests on. So October 28th rolls around, and this was the day that Jeffrey and Melinda's daughter Anna were supposed to be getting married. But instead of being a groom that day, Jeffrey ended up being a pallbearer at his future mother-in-law's funeral. So the family was basically devastated. In a news thing that they did, speaking with the Plesovic family, they said that they all slept in the same room, that it was hard for them to be in the house alone. They all had to be kind of huddled together in a room, and they had to sleep in the same room because they were so upset by this. And poor Anna's wedding was completely ruined, and it was just kind of a mess. About 2 days after the funeral, Jeffrey ended up being arrested for murder. What? He was just a pallbearer at a funeral, and he was a pallbearer of the woman he supposedly murdered? Yep, that happened. So, he was charged with aggravated murder and was given a $1 million bond. Melinda Plesovic's DNA was found on the tactical knife in his car. So, why did he do it? That is the big question. He wasn't married to her yet. So why would he kill his fiance's mother? beats me. Anyway, so according to his confession, Melinda discovered a gun and knife in their home, and then questioned whether he was the father of baby Aurora. This is his confession, keep in mind. He then said he accidentally shot Melinda when he went to grab the gun from her. Then he blacked out and couldn't remember anything, presumably when he stabbed her 36 to 37 times. So, it came out later that Scullin's credit card had been declined 14 times for the wedding venue, and the wedding venue contacted Plesovic instead of contacting Jeffrey and told her that the wedding was going to be canceled because they didn't have payment. Melinda had planned to confront him over it that weekend. Whether she did so ahead of time or not, I don't know. This is where the confusion lies in. Also, it came out that the robberies and break-ins were actually done by Scullin, who staged them. What? I am so confused by this. Okay, so he was actually found guilty of filing false police reports on top of the murder charges. So this is where my confusion lies. If he was doing all this, he was stealing money from them, clearly, because he had financial difficulties. But why was he staging break-ins? That I don't understand. So, gonna take a break, and then we'll get back into the story a little bit more to see if we can kind of decipher some of the weird stuff that went on. Alright, so let's go over the facts again. Jeffrey Scullin was arrested for aggravated murder, was given a $1 million bond. He apparently stabbed his future mother-in-law 36 to 37 times and shot her. But apparently it was over a credit card thing that was denied, so they weren't going to have a wedding. I mean, to me, I feel like there's a lot more to the story than what's being said. My envisioning of what happened, and again, this is just my opinion, this is not fact. It could be, but I don't know, because I can only give you the info that I know. I feel like these break-ins that he had committed, she found out about them, or she found out something about the gun and the knives and all that, and she was gonna call the police on him. I don't think it had to do with the credit card being declined. Police also used the prior break-ins as like proof that he planned this all along and didn't, you know, for first degree murder rather than, sorry, I had a hiccup that came up randomly. Instead of using it as second degree murder, they were able to prove it was first degree murder with those break-ins. I feel like he did not plan to kill her. I feel like he lost his shit when she found out about some things and she was going to call the cops on him, and he lost it. Because I don't think canceling a wedding, I don't think that's enough of a thing to freak out about. I mean, obviously the kid was messed up, but I don't think that a canceled wedding is enough for him to snap. So he ended up being found guilty, of course, and he was sentenced to, or he was given, I guess I should say, sorry, I'm getting sleepy. I'm telling you, this talking to yourself for a half hour gets so freaking exhausting. You don't know unless you do it. I need a co-host. I need somebody to back and forth with. Anyway, what was I saying? See, now I've lost my train of thought. Oh, Lord, guys. Lord almighty. So yeah, he was given a life sentence. He will never see his daughter again, and his fiance ex-fiance, I should say, called him a monster at the sentencing. And obviously, rightfully so, he murdered her mother. I know that this story is not as clear-cut as the rest of them. The reason I shared it was because it's not as clear-cut as the rest of them. I think there are so many things that didn't come out. I feel like there's so much more to the story than we know. I believe they got the right guy, but I don't think they got the right motive, is what I'm saying. I think there's a lot more to it. And I kind of want to open it up to you guys, like, what you think actually happened. Put it on Twitter, @CoffinCast. Interact with me. Say hey. If you have any ideas. So, yeah, I'm closing the story because I'm just, my brain is, like, all in knots because I have no idea what I, it's such a confusing story to me. Either way, see, I'm yawning now. I'm going to take a nap after this. You have no idea. I release these at midnight. I record them during the day. I'm taking a nap. I don't care. Anyway, if you have any updates or any story, any updates, corrections, things like that, hit me up at Twitter, on Twitter. God, this is the best closing I've ever had. Hit me up on Twitter @CoffinCast, and that's with a capital C, just one capital C, @CoffinCast on Twitter. Give me any updates, corrections. I will give you a shout out and give you credit. Also, if you have any ideas for things you'd like me to research, all you have to do is go, hey, look up this person. Tell me what you think. I will tell you what I think. I'll do a week's worth of research on it, and then I will present it, and I will give your name at the beginning of the podcast. So definitely do that. If you're interested in co-hosting, send me a voice message through Anchor, anchor.fm, and I will listen, just do a quick little presentation of a crime story. Sad death, funny death, whatever. Yes, death can be funny. Share it with me. If it's good, I will invite you to do maybe an episode or two. See if it's something I want to do. Or if I just want to keep talking to myself, maybe I'd rather just do that. I don't know. Like I said, I'm tired, y'all. I'm going to also try to get a actual podcasting microphone because I'm literally using my iPhone earbuds right now, and I have noticed a lot of crackling. I had to re-record this portion of it because it was like, oh my god, that is so annoying. So I'm going to look into it. If you guys have any suggestions, any fellow podcasters, if you have suggestions on not very expensive podcast mics, I'd really appreciate it. Again, @CoffinCast on Twitter. Also, I'm going to be setting up an Instagram because somebody suggested it. I don't know how to do this. I've never had an Instagram, but I'm working on it, so find information on that on Twitter in the next coming days. So yeah, we're gonna close it there because homegirl needs a nap, y'all. I've said y'all twice in this episode, and that's more than I've said it in my entire life. So yeah, I'm gonna take a nap. Anyway, I love you. You're beautiful. Don't change. Also, life is a dream walking, but death is going home. Wahaha. Have a great week, guys.